Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, whatever it is where you are. My name is John Manimus Medeiros. I use the name Manimus to distinguish myself from hundreds of others of men whose name is also John Medeiros. Manimus comes from John Manuel Nicholas Thomas Medeiros. My full name, if you include a baptism name, and a confirmation name. All very interesting, isn't it? So, it's early October 2021, and if you go to stores on a fairly regular basis, as I do, you can see that we're getting ready for Halloween. One of the great holidays in the United States of America. In fact, it is so noticeable in neighborhoods in front of people's houses, the decorations, the leaves, the corn stalks, the pumpkins, the monsters, and the foods that we associate with Halloween. And at times it seems like Americans enjoy Halloween more, even more than Christmas, although Christmas is a little more expensive. Halloween is one of the, what I call the four chocolate holidays. That's Halloween, Christmas, Valentine's Day, and Easter. So we got October, December, February, and somewhere usually around April, although sometimes it's March, late March. So we have these four wonderful holidays to enable us to eat chocolate and tell ourselves it's for a solemn celebratory reason. And I wonder sometimes if the chocolate pumpkins are melted to make chocolate Santas, and the leftover chocolate Santas are then melted down to make hearts, and the leftover hearts might be melted down to shape into bunnies. Anyway, we keep the chocolate coming during the cool weather. So, I want to talk about a different kind of holiday, the holiday of voting, when we vote. And how important it is, and how Americans like myself, who are concerned about the terrible signs of corruption and danger to our democracy because of infiltration of white supremacists and Klan members in police and political parties and in positions of authority, doing many destructive things, but perhaps the most destructive thing they are doing is voter suppression and gerrymandering, cheating, turning our elections, our state-run democratic elections, into elections that are manipulated and controlled so that the outcome can be controlled by a political elite or a political class. I call them the American nobility. There are a lot of problems we have to address, very, very important problems. Probably the most important of all is our changing of the atmosphere, the methane and the carbon dioxide that are causing global warming and climate change. We started with global warming, but now we seem to use the phrase climate change more. Climate change sounds more like something that could happen by itself, but it's not happening by itself, it's happening by human activity. The other part of this disaster, this incredible disaster, which could even destroy life on Earth, is the chemical pollution, the toxins. We use poisons, and we use poisons to stop, hide, suppress the living things we don't like. Insects, weeds, animals, including mice and rats. And it probably makes sense to us to use poisons by what we have learned from the past couple of centuries, is that it is extremely rare, perhaps impossible, to make a poison that kills only one thing. We're all related, remember? Our Native American friends tried to tell us when our European ancestors arrived here. They said, you know, walk the earth as though you are related to everything that lives. Then hundreds of years later, in the 1990s, we did the Human Genome Project. And lo and behold, our scientists discovered that the Native Americans were absolutely right. The First Nations. We usually describe them as having a kind of a natural religion or primitive religion. But statements like walk the earth as though you're related to all that lives is not a religious statement. It's a scientific statement. And the Human Genome Project proved that it was true. Scientific proof that it is true. We are related to all that lives. You and I, human beings, we carry the same genes as fruit flies, rabbits, worms, who knows what else. Many of the same genes that exist in hundreds, thousands of the animals in the world also exist in us. The genes that give us eyes and ears and brains and bones and muscles. And appetite and thoughts. Well, we could destroy a lot of living things, including ourselves, with our toxins, our poisons, which have penetrated everywhere in the environment, including in our own blood. And you can verify all these statements. You know, I'm not going to have scientific footnotes telling me what journal to look at and where to find proof or documentation of my scientific viewpoint. I'm just going to give it to you, but you can check it out anytime you like. And that way you'll verify it yourself. So I want to tell you something about who I am and why I feel qualified to make this suggestion to all of my neighbors in the United States of America, certainly directed at all Democrats and progressives. And my suggestion is that we need to use leverage. We need to do something different, not a protest. Don't write a sign. Don't go on a march. I mean, you can do that. It's not totally useless, but it's close to useless. Because if you look at our history, you can see that it doesn't work. We had political conflict in the middle of the 19th century. There were abolitionists who wanted to abolish slavery, and there were slave owners who wanted to preserve slavery as a wonderful way to have labor to make profits, picking cotton and performing other hard, difficult agricultural labor. Not just cotton labor, but farm labor, all kinds of farm labor, from planting to harvesting, processing. Picking cotton was a horrible kind of labor. It may sound easy if you didn't think about it, but if you check out the details, it was devastatingly difficult and exhausting and destructive. First of all, as you pick the cotton, you put it in a bag, and the bag gets bigger and heavier, and you have to drag that bag along the ground, through the fields, as you pick the cotton. So it becomes a very large bag and a very heavy bag. And remember, this work is done in locations where the temperature is often 90 degrees and higher. And the sun is shining on the top of your head. Another thing that probably many people do not know is when you pick cotton by hand, there is a dry cotton boll, or the leaves, the part of the plant that was around the cotton and enclosing it kind of pops open a bit and dries, and it's very, very sharp. It's pointed and sharp as a knife. So when you pick cotton, if you pick it in a hurry so that you can fill your bag and make the master happy, you cut your fingers. That's right. Imagine having a job like that, where what you do constantly cuts your fingers. Sounds like real fun. So that's what we stole African people from the west coast of Africa, brought them across on ships, threw a few overboard on the way if they were, sick or the ship seemed to be getting a little too heavy. And we disconnected them from their past and their culture and their relatives, took away their surname and their date of birth and their location of birth, deprived them of identity. And this conflict between the abolitionists and the slave owners became political, dominant in our society. It involved a lot of writing and argument and discussion and anger and resentment. And it involved making laws so that a slave owner could chase a slave, treat them as property that had been stolen or lost, and claim them. Laws were passed so that it was impossible for slaves to become free. Think of how our history would have changed dramatically, how profoundly our history would have changed if the Southern slave owners decided it was wiser to allow slaves to have a path to freedom. After a certain number of years, they could be free. Imagine if the slave owners said it was okay for them to be educated, learn how to read and write, learn a trade, learn how to do something other than pick cotton, or hoe the fields, or harvest the crops. How different it would have been. But the conflict rose, expanded, intensified, until both sides decided it was time to use violence. We had the Civil War, and 100 years later in the 1960s, we had another Civil War. This time, we sent the black men to fight in Vietnam alongside the white men. And maybe they developed a closer relationship, because this is what we understand and have observed, is that men in battle do grow close. They form a bond because they have to protect one another in order to survive. But isn't that the way all life is, that we have to protect one another in order to survive? So the Civil War failed, and we had the civil rights movement in the 1960s, and we had JFK and RFK and MLK, the three Ks, who were all assassinated because they were fighting for democracy in the United States of America. And did the civil rights movement succeed? It's hard to measure, isn't it? We still have serious racism in the first 20 years of the 21st century. We still have black men being shot and killed by white men, and the white men are not charged with a crime. And in those few occasions when they are charged, they're not convicted. For the first time in hundreds of years, a white police officer was convicted of murdering a black man in 2020. I guess that's a change, but it has been rather slow, hasn't it? So what I'm here to try to persuade you of a reality that I see, and that is that much of the political action of American citizens amounts to expressing your opinion. It's good. It's important. It's a good thing to do. I'm not saying it's you. Like I said, I'm not saying it's totally useless. But it's not going to make the changes you want. It hasn't in the past, and it won't in the future. You have to go beyond expressing your opinion. Believe me, you're not going to hear me suggest violence, because the reason I don't suggest violence is because I'm against it. It's because, or I'm passive, or a pacifist. The reason I don't suggest violence is because it won't work. It's just not going to work. What you have to do is you have to demand a share of the power. You have to get political leverage. This is what we have to do. We have progressives and Democrats. You have to get political leverage to compel the Democratic Party to enter into a coalition. How can you do that? You can do that at the time of a presidential election because of the College of Presidential Electors. Because of the way the Electoral College works, because of the way the electoral system works for election of a president, a small group of people can form a small political party, and you can nominate, you can name or appoint, use whatever the legal term is best. You can appoint presidential electors, and you can take the chance, make the effort, and publicize your campaign. And you can persuade voters to vote for your presidential candidate, not to actually get elected president, but to get electoral votes on the basis of a political goal such as mandatory voting and no party registration. No party registration would discourage or prevent, at least discourage and possibly prevent, gerrymandering, because gerrymandering can occur only when the political parties have a reasonable basis to believe they know how people are going to vote in advance. Now, they use other information. They use your political identity, so to speak. If you're active in a party, they use your economic class, you know, your income level, the neighborhood you live in. Yeah, the neighborhoods, that's a big one. They make judgments about your ethnic background and the neighborhood you live in that tells them how you're probably going to vote. And then they create these crazy gerrymandered voting districts in order to capture votes. The Republicans do it to capture their Republican votes, and the Democrats do it to capture Democrat votes. So how can we stop this? How can we stop voter suppression? Not by marching with a sign. Not by screaming and shouting and writing essays and traveling to other cities and writing your congressman. The only thing they understand is a threat to their power, a real threat to their power. Listen, the word threat does not necessarily mean violence. It means leverage. It means the possibility that you can take something from them, that you can force them to share power. So how can you get this leverage? And why mandatory voting? Why no party registration? Well, I'm going to explain that further in the future. This webcast has been much longer than I intended. I wish I could say what I have to say in 6 words, like everybody else who advertises on television and the radio. And I'm not going to talk as fast as a television advertisement or a radio advertisement. I'm going to talk in a normal voice, and I'm going to do my very best to persuade you that I'm qualified to make this suggestion to you. I'm going to explain the suggestion and the history behind it and why it should work if you're willing to make the effort.